What's that dish? Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Food Safety Dish. I'm your host, Catherine Kavanaugh, and today our food safety team is joined by very special guests, Keisha Rainey and Shamila Roberts. We're talking all about current good manufacturing practices and how this knowledge can empower communities to better preserve health, abundance, and local food security. But before we dig in, here's a brief background on what a current good manufacturing practice is and why they are used, as well as a brief overview of processed foods and their relation to American diets. Current good manufacturing practices, otherwise known as CGMPs, are a set of Food and Drug Administration regulations that outline the basic conditions and practices that facilities must follow to be considered a sanitary food processor. CGMPs are general regulations that allow each operation to develop and adopt practices that best fit their facility, but serve as the foundation of any food safety program. The regulations encompass 9 different aspects of production facilities, including personnel, plant grounds, sanitary operations, sanitary facility, equipment, processes, warehouse, holding, and defect action. Essentially, the CGMP regulations ensure that a facility has trained staff in a building that can be cleaned where waste can be disposed of properly, as well as having the appropriate procedures for holding and distributing food to prevent contamination. CGMPs have been the standard of basic food safety in food processing facilities since the rule was first proposed in 1967 and apply to all domestic and international facilities that manufacture, process, pack, hold food, and/or are governed by the FDA's Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. The recommended practices have been modernized by adding new rules that enhance food safety as technology advances. Fun fact, the C stands for current because the modernized version of the rule requires that manufacturers have technologies and systems that are up to date or top of the line to better prevent food safety concerns. Now, why are CGMPs important, especially today? As I mentioned, CGMPs act as the guiding principle for protecting food from contamination during the processing and manufacturing process. CGMPs are especially important today because of the high portion of processed foods that make up the typical American diet. A processed food is any food that has been altered during preparation, including freezing, canning, cooking, or drying. For example, pre-cut and packaged baby carrots, canned carrots, and carrot cake are all considered processed foods. An ultra-processed food is a food product that has been intensely manipulated by the manufacturer, like chips, cereal, and candy. The mass production of processed foods began as a way to feed soldiers in World War I and as a solution to food shortages and malnutrition. Their popularity kicked off in the 1950s as consumers shifted food preferences to fast and affordable meals. The popularity of processed and ultra-processed foods has continued to increase with an expected market increase of $594.7 billion between 2023 and 2028. However, these early processed foods look very different than the ones that make up over 58% of the average American's daily caloric intake. Today's processed and ultra-processed foods include juice concentrates, artificial sweeteners, coloring agents, fats, and preservatives to improve flavor and extend shelf life. These additives make a diet high in processed and ultra-processed foods worrisome because of their impacts on appetite, hormones, weight, and the likelihood of developing obesity and other chronic diseases. Despite these common notions of processed foods, not all processed foods and preserved foods are bad and include a dizzying number of chemical additives. Processed foods, like prepackaged and canned carrots, have minimal additives and act as an affordable and accessible produce option. When purchasing processed food products, it can be helpful to look at the label to see what kinds of additives are in the product. This can help you get a better idea of the nutritional value of the can of soup or slice of cheese you are consuming. CGMPs are critical to ensuring that these and all other processed foods remain safe for consumers and protect them from allergen and chemical contamination. I want to pivot really quickly to discuss canning and preserved foods. Food preservation, a form of processing, attempts to prevent growth of microorganisms in food and inhibit enzymes that accelerate food spoilage during storage. Canning is a process that utilizes heat to perform the sterilization and preserve the life of the processed foods and typically is used for produce. Canned foods were essential to feeding soldiers during World War I and World War II, as well as feeding Americans during the Great Depression and Great Recession. In fact, the U.S. government used at-home canning efforts to help preserve produce and increase the available food supply. Another fun fact, the USDA developed mother-daughter canning clubs and community canning centers for rural families to promote canning efforts during both World War I and World War II. These at-home canning efforts resulted in nearly 3.5 billion quarts of consumed canned fruits and vegetables being hand-canned by American women and children. At-home canning popularity ebbs and flows, typically increasing in popularity during times of economic turmoil, like the Great Depression and Great Recession, and during times of food supply uncertainty, like the COVID-19 pandemic. At-home canning has always been a way for families to stretch their resources and gain food security, but also as a way to gain a sense of control. Today, many people practice at-home canning as a hobby and a form of expression rather than out of financial necessity. Yet, we might be poised for a resurgence of preserved goods as a practical way to not only transform fresh produce, but to increase shelf life, food availability, and lower the ecological impact of wasted food or food that is energy intensive to store. Turning back to CGMPs, canning, preserving, and processing food can be complicated and dangerous if the proper steps and safety measures are not implemented. For example, if an incorrect sterilization method is used while canning, microorganisms can form, causing the food to spoil and be unsafe for consumption. This is why CGMPs are an essential component to ensuring food safety. So with all this in mind, let's hear from Carolina Farm Stewards Association about their online training module and how we can apply that knowledge to our lives today. Originally from Denver, Colorado, Keisha Rainey moved to Columbia, South Carolina as an adolescent. She completed a degree in business administration from Newberry College. Keisha has experience in the food service industry and financial institutions, as well as assisting different industries in running their business operations. In 2019, she found her passion when working for the South Carolina Department of Agriculture. There, Keisha held several titles, including fruit and vegetable inspector, peanut grader supervisor, gap consultant, and hemp compliance inspector. Currently, she is the food system specialist for the Carolina Farm Stewardship Association. She lives in Lexington, South Carolina, and enjoys agriculture's diversity. She also engages with farmers and helps them be successful. Shamila Roberts is the dedicated CEO and founder of Green Raven Organics, a 501c3 nonprofit in Charlotte, North Carolina, with a mission that goes beyond just growing produce. It's about cultivating hope and nourishing communities. A wife and a mother to three beautiful daughters, Shamila's life is a testament to tenacity and resilience. Born and raised in Syracuse, New York, she has a bachelor's degree in business management and economics management from SUNY Empire State College. She has an extensive project management and leadership background across various industries, utilities, finance, and construction. Upon the birth of her now one-year-old, she realized she'd rather become a stay-at-home mom. She is a sourdough baking mama and bakes all things sourdough as a for-profit arm to raise money to purchase land. Shamila's journey began in foster care at a mere 6 months old, where she was embraced by the kindness of her village. Adopted at the age of six, she found stability, love, only to tragically lose her adoptive mother to a food-related disease when she was 10. This heartbreaking event fueled Shamila's determination to make a difference in the world of food insecurity. Her dream is to acquire land that will serve as the foundation for Green Raven Organics, a place where organic, locally grown, and fresh produce will flourish to benefit her community. Shamila's ambition extends far beyond providing food. It's about eradicating food deserts in North Carolina. She firmly believes that everyone, regardless of their circumstances, deserves access to nutritious food. She is sowing the seeds for change through her nonprofit. Her vision is to be a beacon of hope for those struggling with food insecurity, a legacy that honors the memory of her adopted mother, and a promise to her daughters that a single act of kindness can ripple out to transform lives. Welcome to the Food Safety Dish, Keisha and Shamila. We're so excited to have you today.
Thank you. Thanks for asking. We're really excited to be here.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here today.
Yes. Well, let's get into it. Let's just start by talking about common good manufacturing practices. Can you say what are they and why are they important?
Yeah, so current good manufacturing practices actually comes underneath the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is better known as FSMA. which was enacted in 2011, and it's our governing body for most of our food production. And so there are 7 parts to that. And so the first part is what we focus on, which is the preventative controls for human food. And under that is subpart B, which is the good manufacturing practices. So it is a way for the regulation to be able to help producers guide them through manufacturing products, especially their low-risk foods, and how to do that safely. And so it's important because we want to make good food. We want to do our value-added products, but we also want to make sure that we're doing those correctly.
Thank you for clarifying. And can you also say what prompted the need for this resource?
Yeah, so this resource was already actually in the works with Carolina Farm Stewardship's Kim Butts before I came on a couple years ago. And so when she transitioned, she kind of handed it off to me. But the awesome part is that we love developing curriculum for when laws and regulation go into place, right? So you can have all these laws and regulations, but there also has to be a little implementation practice, right, on how we get this information across, how producers understand the information and can utilize it in their production. And so this was really important to be able to have some one-on-one workshops in the state of South Carolina and North Carolina to be able to see producers in a more small, comfortable space with their peers, listening to different instructors teach the CGMP modules, and then actually having the module piece they can do on the computers. And so it was just, you know, really important to be able to help producers figure out where they fall in the law, what they should be doing to stay in compliance of the law, and any kind of other things that relates to their food safety, making sure they're avoiding those things like their chemical and their biological and physical hazards.
Yeah, we got to work with Kim a bit last year during our first cycle of the current grant we're on, and it was really lovely to see how these resources kind of came to be and that they're getting continued. And I wanted to ask Shamila specifically if you could share your journey to get here and what information was necessary with your business and where and how you found it, and maybe how that ties into some of the things you're doing now.
Absolutely. I would love to share my journey. When I decided to become a stay-at-home mom and found Green Raven Organics with the mission of providing organic, locally grown food, it was really challenging to find the information until I found Carolina Farm Stewards Association. I went to a farm conference in November and had a chance to connect with Keisha and some of the other team, and they gave me the information I needed. So with me having a micro bakery and wanting to understand the proper sanitation procedures, making sure I have a hygienic workspace, I'm making sure. So for example, I make sourdough bread. I need to make sure my surfaces, the proper surfaces, stainless steel or butcher block are compliant. If you're going to be selling, you want to make sure your space is clean. All those things, I was provided the exact details with the information provided from the Carolina Farm Store with their self-guided course, which is super important to me. For other reasons, I learned about labeling. I learned they had links provided to take me to the information where I can find it later, go back, reference it later, as that information is super important to me. It's building trust with my customers and also with me wanting to have a community-based food processing center. It was also the foundation to understanding what that looks like.
Yeah, so you're definitely coming from a small business perspective, it feels like. Why is this knowledge important to you and beyond, you know, just based off the experiences you just spoke on?
Sure, I can answer that too. So for me, as a nonprofit owner dedicated to providing clean and safe food with ambitions to establish a food preservation business later for my community, food safety holds a paramount importance to me. It's crucial for several reasons. Obviously, the public health, ensuring the food that I provide is top priority to me, as I want them to be, you know, healthy. I don't want them to get sick from the food that I provide them. Something else is the trust. I want to prioritize that, high standards for food safety, so they know that when they get something from me, I am compliant to the GMP standards, and both for my nonprofit and the food preservation aspirations that I have with food safety. I want to actually become certified master canner so that when I have my operation, I'm following the exact approved recipes. You know, there's a lot of people who, oh, my grandma did it this way, my grandmother did it that way. But, you know, ignorance is bliss, which you don't know, you know, we don't have to be responsible for. But I want to be responsible for providing safe canning opportunities and safe food for the community. For example, once I have this awesome farm and I'm providing all this food, I want the underserved community to say, okay, I don't have to go get unhealthy food. This food can be extra food that I'm buying from the farmer's market, from the farm, or that they're growing vertically in small spaces, can be stored safely for later. So they're not having to rely on the grocery store as much. And the food that they're canning is safely and it's more healthy for them. Obviously, legal reasons. I want to be sure that I'm compliant to protect myself. You know, I don't want to be sued for getting people sick with botulism or things like that. I want to hold myself to the accountability standard. And actually, the last most important part is sustainability. I want to make sure that I'm being safe and I'm growing in my business because of what I'm known for. They know that it's safe. They know that I'm reliable. They know that they have questions, I can answer them. That's the main thing. I want to be knowledgeable in this food that I'm giving the people that I'm serving. A lot of people, if they don't know something, they stray away from it. So I want to be confident in the information that I'm giving them about the food that I'm canning for them or teaching them to can themselves, and the sourdough bread that I'm baking for them. It's clean, and this is how you do it too. Here's some starter, and this is the way you're going to do it. So I empower myself with the information, and it's going to help me thrive in my small business.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I feel like it's important to note how much consideration and accountability has to go in when, you know, someone like you has a business and also a priority to be safe and clean and to think about all these things all at once. It's a big task for any kind of producer or, you know, production style a product. And I'm curious what the advantages are of making a value-added product. You know, how do farmers decide when to expand into value-added food processing? How do small business owners decide what types of products to make? So, you know, maybe answering that just with how you manage your relationship with farmers and food suppliers would be interesting. But yeah, what are the advantages of a value-added product?
So the top three for value-added is going to be diversification. Two ways I do this. I grow vertically my herbs in my small space. So there's the thyme, there's the basil, and I also make a sourdough business. So I use the herbs that I grow in my sourdough. Originally, I started with just making plain sourdough. As my market grew and the need grew for different varieties, I said, okay, let me go to the farmer's market to buy a bunch of jalapenos. Then I found another source for things that I could not grow to make blueberries, for example. So I make a blueberry sourdough. I make herb sourdough. Diversification, number one. Those, when you have higher margins and things like that, there's more profit for you. Also, you know, there's a brand differentiation that comes along with that. I'm known for my flavorful sourdough now. I started off with plain, but now it's brand differentiation. I'm known for that, and it keeps my customers coming back. So we have diversification for value added, providing those higher margins, which can bring higher prices. You can get that profit you need to sustain your business, and creating that brand differentiation with value added is how, those are the top three things I like to focus on.
Yeah, thanks for summarizing that.
Keisha, do you have anything else to add about how farmers might utilize the value added products and maybe how they know when the right time it is to start doing that or what kinds of things to do? Because there's such a variety of things to make. So how do you narrow that down in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, kind of piggybacking off what Shamila said, it's, you know, it's a way to diversify yourself. You know, everybody's, you know, doing some type of farming, like, okay, here in the South in the summertime, we know we're going to see a lot of squash. We know we're going to see a lot of zucchini and collards and things of that nature. But how do you kind of take your product to the next level? You know, if you're growing cabbage and you have an abundance left over, well, then now we can make that into a chow chow, right? Kind of having yourself a little bit stand out into the market is the really big thing, because we have so many growers that are growing beautiful products. They're going to the market, they're going to their wholesalers, but they're still having a lot left over. And, you know, they're going to have to either that goes to waste, or they have to give it away for no profit. And, you know, when you're talking to these buyers, when you're talking to restaurants, what else can you bring to the table, right, to make you stand out? You know, when you're growing tomatoes, maybe you're growing heirloom tomatoes, right? When you're growing squash, maybe you're growing a different variety of squash that nobody's actually seen before, and just standing out. It's just a way for them to take their business to the next level, get into an area where they're really not used to, and kind of break it into that niche market. There's so many different ways to be able to add value to the product that you already have. We've seen a lot of growers go toward recipe cards. So now when they're selling at farmers markets or selling to restaurants, they're saying, hey, you know, this is a good recipe that I use, and how to be able to, you know, eat this product. But now, like I said, now maybe we're dehydrating the product, right? Maybe we're making a jam. Maybe we're making salsa. So it's just kind of fun and creative how farmers can kind of tap into these value-added products and really add value to what they're doing. And two, I'm a believer that if you do something for a very long time the same way, you might get a little stagnant, right? So maybe you want to kind of branch out and do something different. And, you know, if you make some income off of that, that's a bonus at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned that too, Keisha. When you do something the same time, you can become stagnant. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that in my corporate career, you know, doing the same thing and kind of got boring. And I've been doing the farming, you know, vertical, small scale farming for about 15 months now. And it's so exciting, you know, growing different herbs, watching the process go along. And I'm learning about dehydrating my herbs because, you know, mint grows like crazy. So being able to sell that and find different ways to market that is definitely something the value added produces. And it's fun. Like you said, I'm having more fun than my life right now that I've done in my career in the last decade.
For sure. I mean, especially like if you're making the bread and the lady across the street's making the jelly, y'all are onto a really good track, right? You're starting a really good business there. And that's also building that community. You know, that's the big thing. Our local food systems doesn't survive without that community support, right? You know, giving back to your community, feeding into your rural areas that, you know, wouldn't have access to these things, right? Kind of getting out of that mass produced and overloaded chemical food and going to a very fresh source to say, oh, I can go get my bread from Shamila. And I also can get that education piece from Shamila too. You know, knowing who's growing your food. And, you know, Shamila is very exciting because she's excited about making the food safe. You know, she's protecting the people that she's feeding, and that's extremely important.
Absolutely. Exactly. Especially when you have, with me having a nonprofit and my goal is to purchase that excess and providing it, when you have that access and you can provide tomato sauce, you can't, you know, you got to get an approved recipe, but just having that skill set of canning and learning what to do with those other, it multiplies in many different ways. So yes, you can sell it in different ways, but knowing what to do with that produce so it does not go bad and we're not wasting food, it ties right into that, seeing how we can use what we have and doing what you can so we're not relying on the mass production of noodles that are super unhealthy for you because it's cheaper. So yeah, I get really excited about this stuff.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, you ladies just really kind of ran me right into our next question, which is great. But I'd love to just expand upon this idea of like, what do you think these advantages of preserving foods to communities are beyond just like preventing food waste and like preserving things at the peak season? You know, how can preservation address issues like access and inequality and really provide a pathway towards better community resilience? So I guess my question is, I'm wondering what your visions are, how preserved food and like maybe how it could be better distributed to provide for more sustainable and healthy communities in the future and in the present too.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think The big thing is, you know, like I said, having people like Shamila who are taking this very seriously, but also are willing to educate others. I think having preserved food is good. Yes, for the food waste part of it, but also just to be able to put more food in people's pantries for a longer amount of time. You know, food DSA boxes of fresh fruits and vegetables are great, but how do we sustain, you know, in those winter months and those colder months when we're not producing as much, right? You know, it's so much easier to go pull out a jar of something and be able to use it. And so, and like I said, I think it's an education piece, mm-hmm. right? Other people being able to learn like, oh, I can probably preserve this a better way, or I can make this into a jam. And just having those value added products at your fingertips, you know, in a perfect world, I'd love to see us go more to these, you know, preservation practices of dehydrating, you know, mm-hmm. things like apples and being able to send that home with children on the weekend, you know, for schools and have other preserved things that they could have. That they don't have access to food, you know, they don't have access to a grocery store. I remember when COVID hit, you know, there were so many communities and recently communities that have lost grocery stores, right? So they're relying on a Dollar General, they're relying on a gas station. And so if we can do more practices around preserving food and how to do that safely and have more of our farmers who are doing a really good job of this, educating more of their community, it will really help, I think, with that food access and also with that education piece, and most importantly, getting everybody to eat healthier mm-hmm. overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great intro to what I like to talk about impacts. So I'll just say this, a food desert in where I'm located is currently 14% in Charlotte, North Carolina, mm-hmm. which means people don't have transportation or the nearest grocery store is less than, they have more gas stations and places they can go to food besides a grocery store. And that's 14% where that's really huge. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot of people don't have access. They don't have transportation. What I'm looking to do with my nonprofit and the reason why I want to have a food preservation center is that one, I want to empower the communities by teaching the canning skills. It empowers residents. Once they have, they say they're going to the farmer's market, they're buying in wholesale. We're extending the availability of nutritious food beyond their limited access. Okay, they can't get to it, but when they do have it, this is what we're going to do with it. Two, food security. Mm-hmm. Food insecurity. By learning the canning and how to preserve food, and even me, I actually cater to the homeless community too with veterans. So I'm looking at freeze-dried operations. Buying a harvest-ripe machine because it's 95% nutritious. There's new ways to preserve meals, like in a Mylar bag, that's actually tasty. So the first thing homeless people do not have usually is pots and pans. They go to the food pantry and there's a canned good. Then they need a can opener. Mm-hmm. Then they need mm-hmm. all these other things. So if I have these healthy, nutritious foods, I can freeze dry them in the state that they're in. All they need is hot water. I'm empowering people by giving them options with the food, the excess food. There's economic benefits, like you spoke on with COVID-19. I remember panicking, going to grocery store just to find the basics, eggs, meat, chicken. And I'm like, what am I going to feed my family? That's when it hit me like, I got to find another way to do this because one, my husband's furloughed from his job. Unemployment didn't kick in right away. I have 3 children. You know, so it empowered me, you know, not empowered me in the beginning. I panicked first. Then I start finding other ways. What can I do with what I have? So that's that food security piece. And the economic mm-hmm. benefits to that is stretching our budgets. My budget was significantly reduced going down to 1 income with our children, kids being home from school. They ate a lot more food. So with us preserving food and canning, it allowed, like I said, I'm still new to it, but preserving food in general, freezing what we get, we buy it in bulk, it allows me to stretch our budget. Mm-hmm. And it was healthy. So that was that. And then the most important piece is the healthier choices. My adopted mom, I only got to enjoy her for a short term because she did die of diabetes and high blood pressure due to food insecurity. I had abundance of love, but we didn't have a lot of healthy food. We ate, mm-hmm. but the food was not healthy. And she was 52, you know? So healthier choices is something I really, really try to implement with my family from the very beginning. And the more ways I can do that by introducing healthier food, making my own sauces, making my own bread. Bread has 30 different, mm-hmm. commercial bread has 30 different ingredients at minimum. Mm-hmm. Tomato sauce, mm-hmm. you don't even want to look at the back of that can. But those are things, healthier choices when you grow your own food and you can preserve them. Just combating those lack of fresh options in food deserts where, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up in. So this is really personal for me. Empowering my community, providing that food security, allowing budgets to be stretched and people to be empowered with what they do have, and also having those healthier choices for a better type of lifestyle. You know, you don't mm-hmm. have to be sluggish from the bad food you're eating. You can have energy because you have healthy food right. that you canned yourself from the farmer's market or you grew vertically.
Right. I think it's really important what you're talking about, how if a community is able to control, you know, the production of food and it's, you know, the nutrition by like the minimal processing and preserving of things, mm-hmm. like that's going to leave everybody better off. And I imagine too, just, you know, cutting out all those sugars, cutting out all those preservatives, like if yeah. we can have more just like naturally fermented foods, like that leads to better, you know, gut health and all these other things. And yeah. I don't know, it also kind of makes me think about just like even like energy independence, or and on the other side of the coin, like dependence, like specifically thinking about some of our other partners on the grants. Like, so there's some groups out in Montana, their whole thing right now is talking about meat processing capacity, and mm-hmm. you know, beyond that, beyond processing and like who's in control of that, but also you know, the freezing and the storage of that. And it got me thinking, because I've been thinking about the CGMP stuff, just like, you know, if there was more dried and smoked meats instead of like having to rely on freezers for everything, mm-hmm. That's also a lot more secure against, you know, disaster preparedness, or like if you have blackouts and you lose all of the stuff because your, you know, your freezer melts, like that's also terrible. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to think about, how going back to more preserved foods and just like having a lower ecological footprint and also a better community involvement in these practices is just like a win-win for everybody, that, you know, we maybe not for the people that are currently making a lot of money, but I think they've won enough so far. So I think it's time for other people.
They can share.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and you want to know what, it's not even just about poor, rich, or middle class. I want to preserve food. So I'm looking at like a harvest right machine. It's average $4,000. But mm-hmm. what it would do if I was able to help others dry their food, it reduces the need on their electricity bill, which mm-hmm. we know the prices have gone up. The economy is mm-hmm. in a disarray right now. So people who can't already afford, you know, multiple freezers, free Mylar bags are stored safe for up to 25 years. Mm-hmm. So other methods of preserving food is so important to me. You know, I've done a lot of like research. Mm-hmm. So it's like you said, it's not just about poor or rich. It's about using our budget and what we have mm-hmm. to always have access to those healthy mm-hmm. foods. So I think it's just important to explore dehydrated, canning, mm-hmm. freeze drying of those food that we're going to grow. We're going to do it. I'm going to get my harvest right. So mm-hmm. I'll be able to disclose more, but yeah.
Hey there, Billy popping in. I wanted to share a quick anecdote and then ask a question based on that. Catherine, you mentioned losing freezer capacity. I actually have a personal experience with that. We lost power at our farm last week, and unfortunately one of our freezers full of our, you know, organic pasture-raised lamb didn't come back online in time to save some of our frozen meat. So if we had been able to dry or can or preserve it in some other way, that might have been really special. As we were getting ready to record this episode, we had a brief conversation about the history, especially across the South in the Carolinas, Virginia, I think some in Georgia and Texas as well, but of community canning centers. Some were run by state governments, some were run by nonprofits, some were for-profit as well, but that's something that's kind of fallen out of the small and regional scale of our food systems. And as we're having this conversation, you know, and as we run the food safety, you know, education and outreach project that we do, we see places like food hubs and various, you know, infrastructure in the food system. And you're talking about, you know, getting specialized equipment there. How useful would it be? And are there ways that organizations like National Farmers Union or Carolina Farm Stewardship can promote those kind of shared resources, be it for canning, food processing, food packaging and handling, like food hubs, to support small businesses like yours, to support the healthy food system that we all want to see?
I can go first. With my aspirations of having a food preservation center, there's going to be two main focuses: education on how to do it yourself, or if you're out of time, you can pay us to do it for you and trust that it's going to be done safely. So those are two main components of a center that I'm looking to implement with Green Raven Organics. I'm from an urban area, so a lot of people are working, hustling 9 to 5. And then you have the elderly or the my age range, some people stay at home, so they do have time and they do are feeling empowered with information. So I want to provide key pieces, workshops, even supplies, like be a hub to come get canning supplies. You know what I mean? Like I have an approved pressure canner, the Ball books that approve recipes, education, combating that fear. Because a lot of people are afraid of what they don't know. They are afraid of what they don't know. So focusing on that education piece. But if you don't want to know, we can do it for you. People pay for what they think is valuable. And right now there is a big increase in people realizing they can't afford all their food at the grocery store. They want healthy options. And they want a longevity of life. So we do have this interest. Unfortunately, Mecklenburg County does not have that. Even at my extension office, we don't have it. So I'm seeking heavily how to create that for my community. It's definitely needed. I've talked to many people who are interested in preserving their food. So first things first, I'm going to find out how I can become a master canner, starting there. And then we'll let the cards fall how they may, where I can be a hub, but it's needed. People are interested, and education and paying for the services are going to be key.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to that community aspect, right? Like, what are you pouring into your community? How are you supporting it? And on top of that too, I mean, what our median age farmer is what, 65, right? So how do we get more younger individuals to come into agriculture, right? And so, you know, when they think about farming, they may think about it as being outside, being in the heat, all the bugs, all the things, you know, that they may think, oh, this just is not, you know, a desirable path for me. But meeting people like Shamela, or being able to know that, hey, I could grow this and I can make a value-added product. And if I'm supported in my community by having a space to be able to do that, right, have a resource to be able to do that, then maybe we can get more of these younger individuals to be involved in agriculture, taking it to the next level, seeing that there's a bigger range of things that you can do. It would just be so good. We poured a lot of resources into making this curriculum for CGMP and making the manual and the modules, but it would be nice to, you know, have funding to be able to take it to the next level, right? Whether it's something, a mobile situation, or people can use a shared kitchen space and you pick certain rural areas and they can use it, and it's, you know, set up during certain days of the week, or, you know, you've poured the resources back in, you know, maybe, you know, our bigger producers or bigger manufacturers, if they would, you know, just slice off a piece of the pie, right, to put back into a smaller community, to be able to have those preservation courses, be able to have that preservation space, really helps impact our community, right? We have so many people who grow up in their hometowns or their small south towns and they move away, but how do we keep more individuals home stewarding the land and doing some of these practices to help feed their community and themselves?
And I love that you mentioned connecting the average range of a farmer is 60 years old. I'm going to be 33 next month. And my age range is interested in farming. But what my generation was taught was go to college and that will be your success. So right now I went to the USDA with an awesome business plan. They said, hey, you got student loans. So land access for my age range and connecting us to farming is not the problem. It's combating the financials that you need to get land access. So that's another reason why I'm reaching out to the community like, hey, let's buy this bread so I can have land, because I am going to feed my community. And I do believe that everything that's for me will be for me, but that's the land access for my age range from, that gap is loans. And if you look, follow TikTok, I don't know if you guys have it or not, but they want to grow their own food. Farming, yes, the bugs, but there's also hydroponics. There's other types of farming that my age range is interested in, but hydroponic startup is about 50 grand. And on a smaller scale, if you're going to do it just for yourself, a set of 12 is 8 grand. So what it is not only in, getting people interested, is making them feel empowered. Like, yes, you can farm. You don't need 15 acres. You could do it at 2 acres or a quarter acre, and give them that information by the larger scale people sharing information with the smaller aspiring farmers. I've been in this for 15 months and the information, Carolina Farms Food has been so helpful by paying for the conference. And I got to talk to so many farmers and they encouraged me. They gave me, actionable steps to help me combat my financial debt, saying, hey, you'll get there, but try to use money on the side. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so it looks differently for me. But if not, there's a sacrifice that comes with wanting to be a farmer. So me getting talking to them and understanding their path for those who weren't just handed down land, Because a lot of us are going to be first-time farmers and aspiring farmers. So having that connection, I travel to farmers too. They learn from them once a month. I pick a farm and I go say hi. But they teach me something and they say, hey, start with chickens. Start small, which is important for our age range, connecting, getting more people to grow food. So I'll leave it at that. We want to farm. We're gonna get there, and hopefully we can get some more larger scales to pour back into the community to get some more food growing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I love that you said, like, you got to meet so many farms, because that's a big part of it too. Like, knowing who is growing in your area, a barrier that's not really a barrier for you, and maybe it's a barrier for them or whatever, kind of having shared experiences and figuring out a way to overcome that, right? Figuring out a way to rally for the community canning center, figuring out a way to connect to the person that's your neighbor. There might be somebody who's doing something very similar from you a few miles away and going through some stresses, and being able to connect with them to build that community, to kind of build, go over, those things is extremely important.
Billy, jumping in here just one more time because of what you just shared. So the food safety team here at Farmers Union just came back from our annual national convention, and we spent almost 2 full days debating our policy positions. It's a very democratic, inclusive, vibrant organization in that respect. And I was recalling that there's a whole section about, getting more folks into farming and supporting the new farmers. And I just wanted to check in our policy book, and I did see it. I remembered it coming up in the room in the discussion. It's our stated policy that for folks that are trying to get into farming, new farmers, beginning farmers and ranchers should have their student loans forgiven. And that's like an official stated policy of the Farmers Union. So I really appreciate that we get to work with an organization that does that advocacy side of things, in addition to trying to support the education and community building, like on the food safety project. But it's so crucial, and I really appreciate you sharing that experience, because those stories and, again, what we do as communities to build a better food system for the future. And I know that y'all are also doing a Carolina Farmer Stewardship. It's so crucial. So appreciate that part of the conversation right now.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
I think what you all are also talking about is making me think, especially what you were talking about, Keisha, about just how I think there's a lot of space for people to be involved in the food system that's not necessarily farming. And I think the CGMP is like a perfect example. For instance, when I think of myself, like I don't necessarily think like my path is to be a farmer exactly, but I really have a passion for food and I want to, you know, right now I'm working with and a few at the nonprofit, but I think, you know, just thinking also there is so much room for people to be cooking, to be preserving, to just have their hands like in the food system that, you know, isn't necessarily growing. But I think speaking of growing, there's just a lot of room for that to grow. And I think that's really exciting to think about how we can maybe get more people excited about food and being healthy in a community. And I think this is a really exciting way to get that conversation rolling and see the action, you know, start to happen.
Oh yeah. And I looked up some information on the USDA just to see how many urban farms or Black owned farms in the USDA. And in my community, there's 10 farms, but there's producers. So there's 12 producers in Mecklenburg County. So that's saying that it's not a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's not a lot at all. So the opportunity is there, and that's what gets me excited. So in an urban community, what does that look like? Everyone being involved in their own different ways. It's like you said, Catherine, it's not just about being a farmer. There's other opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I love that you brought that piece up, because mm-hmm. you know what I mean? If there's not farming, how can I be part of the solution? Right? So mm-hmm. I love that we've been talking about the canning and the, you know, preserving food or purchasing from the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. How key is that? Supporting local farmers already, keeping our food system so they can grow more healthy food for us. So that's been my biggest push with my community, is purchasing from the farmer's market, getting that number of producers up, and educating people that if you grow $1,000 worth of food in your backyard, you're a producer. Mm-hmm. According to the USDA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I mentioned that to my brother, who's in Rock Hill. And I said, why aren't you got 7 acres? Why aren't you a producer? And he said, well, I don't have a, you know, I'm a small, I only have 7 acres. I said, no, you don't have to have 10 acres anymore to be considered a producer. The USDA across all 50 states says $1,000. I'm growing $1,000 in my small space vertically. Mm-hmm. And value-added goods do count. So it's that, you see what I mean, Catherine? Right. It's that small piece of education. Mm-hmm. There's 10 farms, 12 producers, but there's a heck of a lot of us who can grow some food.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I get excited. So I'll shut up.
I love your passion. It's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah, as a young person also navigating their career still pretty early on in ag, because I work on a farm outside of my work here at NFU, there are so many different options available to folks. And I think the idea is always that like you have to be growing the food, you have to be out there. But that's really not the case, because I do feel like more and more as I get involved in agriculture, just from like a philosophical or like a political standpoint, it needs more support of people who are not just out there growing the food, because the people growing the food have mm-hmm. way too much to do on their hands already, in addition to the things they want to be doing just for their own benefit. And I feel like it's kind of getting into that direction. I think things are getting better in terms of taking more off the growers' plates and realizing that like distributing those roles you have to perform on the farm, you know, there's more room for inclusivity for people who may not have a background in ag, you know, really any tethering to agriculture. So, you know, just thinking about what's been said, I think it's a really pivotal time for new folks to be included in agriculture in a way that they've never been able to before.
Mm-hmm. I'll piggyback on that, Haley. So I have a strong corporate career, right, in project management and tools and, you know, technology. some of the people I went, I said, hey, can I come, you know, learn from you and I can help you with this because I'm good at this. They were so relieved. Like, you can show me some accounting stuff, how to put it in my spreadsheet. Like, be willing to also give of yourself. It's not just a take, take, take. Mm-hmm. But if you're really interested, what can you do to take a load off that farmer? You know, because it's a lot of work. You know, I hate going, especially during busy season. I discovered last year, like, oh, crap. I'm like, I need to be, let me get down here and help, you know, harvest or something. Because they want to give the information, but also see what you can do to help them with your skill set.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, if you learn how to can, maybe you can help the older farmer and say, I'll take the access for mm-hmm. you and I'll can it and we'll put a label on it and we'll make sure the regulation's mm-hmm. right and we'll get out there and we'll sell it, you know, yeah. really helping that piece. And you learn so much. I mean, my background was not in ag at all. I've only been doing this for 6 years and my mind has just been completely open to, you know, the farms, how long they've been doing this, all their different techniques. And like, you know, you just spend a day out there and you just come back so fulfilled. So like you said, there's so many ways to be a part of this industry that are a little bit outside of the box that are not usually mm-hmm. traditional, or bringing back things that people used to do a long time ago that have just gone to the wayside because we mm-hmm. have grocery stores and we depend on them so much. But it's just so nice to be able to grow something very simple in your backyard and then be able to eat it and say, oh, I did that. Look at me. So, you know, yeah.
yeah. And also much more like co-created vision of the food system of like people mm-hmm. being actively involved, like not only in the production and the processing or preserving of the food, but I don't know, just it feels like a more face-to-face network of people knowing who's growing, who's making things, and just kind of establishing that ecosystem of skills that can be transferred. You know, I also have, you know, I went to business school. I have some skills that maybe not all farmers have, but I feel like that's where I can plug in, right? And, uh-huh. you know, like I'm not good at growing in the way that they are, but I have other things to contribute, and so does everybody. So right. I think it's a really exciting way to think about
and just, you know, future networks. Perfect entry to what I was going to mention too. So I always believe that it's the mindset that drives us. Keisha says she's only been in this 6 years, me 15 months, but I started my corporate career in utilities. So when I go to a farm, I automatically think sustainability or solar power or how to reduce the bill, or I ask about irrigation and how much that, you know, their bill is affected, because I have that experience at 7 years working in the utility industry in credit and collections. So I know those things to help reduce bills. I had those conversations, you know, during the hard months. So that was my first part of my career. The second part of my career was being a project manager over marketing for a financial industry. So I learned a lot about marketing, you know, and what things they could do to probably help get exposure and visibility for their farm. The next thing I did in my last 3 years has been in construction project management, and I was studying to be a general contractor. So, oh yeah, I can do raised garden beds. Oh yeah, I can do this. And it's like, oh, it's your mindset. I've been in this 15 months, but I feel so empowered because, one, I'm resourceful. I know how to find the information. I'm really good at leading people. I'm really good at teaching people. And I had to flip my mindset. Oh, I don't have a farm, but what do I have? You know what I mean? What do I have? And that's where it's going to start. I don't have this, but what can I do? I can shop at the farmer's market. What can I do? I can my own food. I don't have time, but I can go support someone else. It's very many different, Billy said it, Catherine said it, Keisha said it, Kaylee said it. There's many different ways that we can contribute to a food system. And I think that should be the key here.
I agree. And I think, you know, leading into the education piece is like, this is why it's so important to have these resources. This is why it's so important to have the conversation. It was crazy. As soon as we finished the modules, not a week later, Shamila and me were connected, and she happened to be looking for exactly what we had just created, right? And she kind of took that and made it her own. And the education piece is just so very, very important, because there's a lot of misconceptions where it's like, it's too hard. I don't have a lot of land. I don't have all of these things that I need to be a farmer or be a producer or to work in this space. and it's so far from the truth. And, you know, it can be very intimidating walking into an industry that you're just unfamiliar with, walking into an industry that may be saturated by other farmers or growers or whatever the case may be. And I encourage anybody to never stop educating themselves. Go to as many workshops as possible, you know, become a member of Carolina Farm Stewardship Association for $40 a year and get that access to that technical assistance for free, but also, you know, get discounts to events and things of that nature and workshops, because, you know, we as professionals, we work in this industry, we talk in the alphabet soup all the time, we talk regulation all the time. And so a grower may get all that information and say, I'm overwhelmed, I have no clue, like feel very intimidated. And so it's nice to be able to have workshops that are a little bit smaller groups, and you're meeting other peers and you're hearing from different instructors, and you're able to get that education piece and get your questions answered live and get a little bit more simplified information versus this big wide jargon of just being, feel like you're water hosed, right? So I encourage individuals to, you know, get the education piece, go to the workshops, go to farms, do farm tours, and really figure out where you fit and where you could possibly fit in the food systems.
Keisha, I love that you brought that up, because Carolina Farm Steward was the hug that I didn't know I needed.
That's so sweet.
When I became a member, you know, I was looking for the information because it wasn't all in one space. And the course was the entry level for that. But then they reached back out for my feedback. I'm like, oh, you care what I have to say? And the information, the feedback that I gave them, I said, hey, we need something in person. This was a great start, but I need something in person. I'm in Mecklenburg County and we do not have anything that would allow me to can or try these methods, you know, to learn, right? So, and then they said, hey, come to the farm conference. We'll help get you there. You know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. My husband works crazy hours. I'm not trying to be taking all the money from the budget to go travel. You know, they help offset the cost. And it empowered me to go talk to other farmers and other people doing things that I like to do. And I reached out to Carolina Farm Steward again, and they always lead me to the information. Because I don't know, and it's overwhelming to search the internet, like Google and TikTok University, YouTube University. I want the, you know, the regulated stuff, the stuff that's going to keep me safe, you know? So, like I said, Carolina Farm Steward was the hug that I can always just send an email or a text to any of the team there and reach back out to me. Will said, hey, Shamila, do you still need a land to grow some food and practice? I was like, no, I figured that out, but I talked to him 5 months ago. You see what I mean? You build that community, and I feel so cared about by them. I that's why I always tell them, like, hey, go, did you check the Carolina Farm Steward out for that information? It's important.
That's so sweet. We definitely appreciate that. There's a lot of hard work that goes into these resources. As Billy, Catherine, and Haley know, like, we have monthly calls and we do updates and all of these things. There's a lot of things that happen to make curriculum, you know, be developed and modules. And there's a lot of partners involved with that, whether it be Clemson, NC State. You know, there's a lot of hands on deck. And so it's a blessing to be able to hear the way that we've impacted you, the way that we're impacting farmers. It's a blessing to know you, to be able to meet you, to watch how you've grown over this time. Because like I said, it makes doing this work, this education piece, really worth it.
Yeah. You know, we had another question kind of about how to keep engaging with the educational resources and continuing to learn. But I think you guys have really just covered it right there. So on that note, you know, can you tell folks how to access this resource and engage with the education that you're offering on CGMP and any other, you know, food safety or farmer and small business support that Carolina Farm Stewardship Association is offering?
Yeah, so we are, this will be our phase two of this project. And so this year we're focusing on doing another workshop in South Carolina, another workshop in North Carolina. We're in that planning stage right now. We do have the modules up. So we're trying to figure out right now, do the workshops need to come first and then the module piece to really bring it a full circle moment? So we haven't really finalized that piece yet, but like I'm going to reiterate, I think it's very important for everybody to become a member of Carolina Farm Stewardship. Shameless plug here, but for $40 a year to be able to have access to an abundance of resource. And we always say, if we don't know, we'll definitely connect you to somebody who does with our other partners. And so really keeping an eye out for our monthly newsletters and our events page to know when those courses are going to be live. Like I said, we're developing now how to roll out those courses. Usually people who took the class were able to get them for free, but we want to be able to make sure they're still accessible, right? So we're working through that. I would assume in the next couple of months, we'll have that finalized. And then, you know, if we get more requests to keep doing it, I hope to do more CGMP workshops in the next years. You know, my boss may hear this and say, oh, we're adding more work to the table, right? But I hope to kind of diversify what we're teaching outside of GAP and food safety, because value-added products are coming, you know, that people want this information. They need this information. You know, we don't want them just going into their kitchen, making a product and getting all the way to the finish line and missing those major steps. So we'll definitely be keeping that information posted of how to access the modules, how to access the workshops. And although we're only knocking out two before September, and then we'll do the train the trainer piece, we also will make sure to be adding some more of those workshops next year as well, reaching some more of those cities in North and South Carolina.
Thanks so much for sharing. It's really very cool to see this resource, you know, not only up and running, but then people are taking it and running with it. And it's amazing to see, Shamila, and to hear your passion and how this resource has really impacted you. And I'm really excited to have you become a master canner and like be that community hub, because I feel like you're a perfect person to do that. So I'm super excited to see how you
That's my next goal. It's actually hard to find like the master canner information. So if anyone knows how to plug that, send that email to me,
right,
or something. That's really something, a goal I want to accomplish as soon as possible. I really want to do that with Green Raider Organics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our mission, is to provide healthy food. So canning is huge with the upcoming harvest season coming. I want to start doing that. So when I do get the excess and buy from the farmer's market, we can safely can that food and get it to the community.
Totally. And I feel like even just you say that information is hard to find is indicative of how that information exists, but has kind of fallen to the wayside. And I think what time, if not now, to like bring that back to the forefront, I think it would really prepare us for a much stronger 21st century and beyond. So I'm totally here for it.
There's information out there on how to can, like, you know, from the colleges and the extensions, but a master canner so I can teach others. That information is where I'm missing.
Yeah. Well, I hope you can find it. But I guess to close, do you all have any final words of wisdom or advice to growers or business owners looking to better utilize CGMPs in their livelihoods and beyond?
I would say farming is a business. You have to treat it as such. And so do the education piece. You know, if there's 10 steps, a lot of people will start at step 8 and go back to 5. And then, you know, and they'll get kind of lost on the way. And so I say, you know, don't be afraid of this work. Lean on your peers. Lean on your resources. Start with the education piece, the regulation piece. Go to as many workshops as possible. Never stop learning. Like I said, getting into agriculture only 6 years ago, you know, I have a lot of my colleagues who've been doing this for a very, very long time. And so it could be a very easy space for me to be intimidated and be really small, but I choose to go the opposite, which is indulge in as many, you know, conferences, workshops, leaning on my peers and growing as much as I possibly can so I can be a benefit for my farmers. And I want my farmers to do the same with their business, right? When we talk about GAP. We talk about keeping, you know, records and making sure you're accountable. It's the same thing here. Like, make sure you're accountable. Make sure you know the resources. Get the education piece, and, you know, add that value. Don't be afraid. Start small. Do something small for just you and your family. And then if it's a success, then, you know, branch it out. And if you don't do well, do it again. That's the biggest thing. You know, we have these resources, and we will keep developing things like this as long as people are interested.
My tidbit of events is going to be a little bit different from Keisha's. It's going to be, don't let fear or the possibility of failure stop you from starting now. There's no better time. There's no, oh, this time is going to be better, or next year this time. Start small and you will get better. My content is horrible, but it's gotten better over the last few weeks. But I started, you know, and that's with anything you do. It's your mindset that's going to be your trajectory. Mm-hmm. So my advice is, don't let the fear of failure or not getting it right. Either way, you're going to learn and you will grow. Green Raven Organics, you get that, girl?
Beautiful. Wow, you guys hit us with that strong life advice, too. That's amazing.
Call us if you just want to talk, if you just need a friend.
Yeah. These are the ladies. Amazing.
Another business opportunity for me and Shamila.
Yeah. I'm here for it. That's so cool.
I actually wrote a little guided journal 2 years ago called The Soaring Woman, where I do talk about how to pivot and soar against obstacles.
Of course you did.
It's called purchase. It's not something, this is who I am. It's not an act. I truly want everyone to thrive. And with all the things that I dealt with in my life, people are like, how are you smiling? It's the mindset. You do the work, and there's a way that you could find a way to see the positive in things. Mm-hmm. So I really just want people to, they say, Shamila, you're in construction last year. You're director of operations this year. You got a micro bakery now. And it's because I choose who I'm going to be when I wake up. Mm-hmm. I don't let that be dictated for me. I know that it's a process, and I'm not afraid to fail because I learn all the time. And every piece of what I've done has contributed to the success of who I am today. Mm-hmm. And that's what people need to see. You can, too, wake up and choose who you want to be.
Boom.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think you're a Renaissance woman. I'm excited to see what you do. So that's my goal too. So, but wow, this has been such an inspiring conversation. And if this is any indicator of how the future of farming is going to go, I think we're in good hands. I think we'll be in good cans. Well, maybe not us, but other things. So
that was gold.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much for being here. Haley, Billy, any concluding thoughts from you two?
No, just thank you so much for offering your, you know, your background, your knowledge, and just sharing, you know, what that means to kind of the work you're doing right now at the Carolinas. We really appreciate it.
I just wanted to flag, you know, listeners, you'll hear this information in the outro and see it in your podcast notes, but please connect with us at NFU. Please connect with the fine folks at Carolina Farm Stewardship and all the other partners that are in the Local Food Safety Collaborative. This is the type of work and education and community building that we really want to do. And if you have questions about what you learned today while you're listening and you want to hear from us, our inboxes are open, our phones are open, reach out. As Keisha, as you were saying, ask for the resources, engage with the education and opportunity. And yeah, I just wanted to echo, thank you guys so much. This is a fantastic conversation, and it gets me really inspired about working even harder on all of these very complex but often rewarding healthy communities and healthy food system challenges. So thanks.
Welcome. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
The Local Food Safety Collaborative is a cooperative initiative established between the National Farmers Union Foundation and the FDA with the goal of providing training, education, and technical assistance to local food producers to ensure good food safety practices and compliance with the Food Safety Modernization Act. National Farmers Union is a grassroots, farmer-driven organization that believes strong family agriculture is the basis for thriving communities. NFU's membership includes over 230,000 family farmers and ranchers across America. Farmers Union's grassroots structure promotes locally initiated policy priorities and educational topics established by their members. If you're interested in learning more about NFU and the work that we do, check out our website at www.nfu.org. And finally, thank you to our sponsor. This podcast is supported by the Food and Drug Administration of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as a part of a financial assistance award 2U01FD006921-04, totaling $1 million with 100% funding by FDA HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement by FDA HHS or the U.S. government. I'm Katherine Kavanaugh, and this is the Food Safety Dish. See you next time.